back with episode 638 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And, when I'm doing my... dropping my battery, I can never remember which side is which, either.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. And are the Jedi coming back? It sure looks that way.
I do believe that probably the best way to find out what your superpowers are, probably not being thrown off a roof. Just saying. It tends to go badly. But anyway, we are going to be finishing up the episodic discussion for the week, ending the 1st of December. Perhaps a little bit of feedback and open topics after that, but we'll see what kind of time we have. But before we do any of that, Edmund, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. As ever, we will talk about whatever we feel like happened in these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled. As always, we try and give you a week or so to catch up before we do that to you.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, we are going to start pretty much in strong form here with Manhattan, Season 2, Episode 8, Human Error. As the project falters, Charlie turns to an unlikely partner for help. And this one came in at an average of 8.75. And Edmund, what did you say about this one?
What I really loved about it was, the sort of central dilemma, as it were, was this test that happens right at the top that goes horribly badly. So Charlie's desperately trying to work out what happened, which forces him to turn to Frank. I really liked the way they were showing the sort of the scientific problem solving, the two of them trying to tackle the problem and go all the way back to the initial development of implosion, but then to come down to that that final twist where you discover that this whole thing had been set up by Frank and giving you a real taste of just how hideously manipulative he can be, where he basically just made sure the test failed, knew exactly what had happened, and was doing it basically to try and get Charlie to step up and figure it out, and then even then having to, as he says at the very end there, hold his hand and lead him to the solution. It was again Frank trying to get Charlie to step up, but basically putting him through heck to keep this from being non-explicit, that's certainly the central part of the episode, but as well, just the we talked about last episode, Doctor Who dealing with dealing with the aftermath of Clara's leaving, the whole aftermath of Meeks and his best friend, whose name I'm spacing on just now, of course, after just getting the confirmation that yes, in fact, his new bride had been killed and dumped in a construction site to cover it up, make it look like an accident, but just some very affecting work, as he is just a complete wreck, and Meeks trying to deal with that, since yes, he is his best friend. Discovering that he may not even be their primary spy on the Hill, and in fact it may just be a lowly cog, but even a lowly cog has to be protected, as the show has done throughout, the way they're melding the scientific work with the personal lives, and just doing it extremely well. And that's not even mentioning Frank's ongoing issues with his own wife, continuing very nice work.
Mm-hmm. This season is really bringing it. I'm enjoying it, and like we said before, it's almost running itself right out of material. So yeah. I don't know what they're going to do. Third season, surprise!
Yeah,
it's set in a different world.
Yeah. Well. I mean, you know, the only thing I can think is, you know, yeah, I mean, they're sort of, you know, if they do get picked up, I mean, yes, they can move on to Teller and the H-bomb and, you know, but then, of course, you know, then, of course, you're getting into the accusations against Oppenheimer eventually. But, you know, I presume that would be what they would move on to because, yeah, I mean, they are definitely running out of time to be on the Hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Moving on then to The Leftovers, Season 2, Episode 9, 10, 13. Meg's path to the guilty remnant follows an intense personal loss. Whoa. Meanwhile, Tom hopes to reunite with Meg after a fallout with his mom. Yeah. Does this qualify under understatements of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Comes in at an 8.75. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom is a seriously messed up dude.
Yes, he is. Yes, on so many levels. What's amazing to me is that this still wound up being the least harrowing episode of the season, and yet it was still so messed up. My favorite part had to be where Meg throws the fake grenade down the school bus of children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, don't forget that was right at the opening of the episode.
Yes.
You know, just to completely emphasize, you know, just how messed up Meg has become, and I thought of it as this was just a tour de force episode for Liv Tyler, who you know, I know I was sort of throughout her career has had her critics about her acting ability, and I thought this was a brilliant response to what all of those critics down the years, because she was quite intense and terrifying, you know, not in the, you know, the David Tennant Kilgrave category necessarily, but certainly in terms of this, you know, I thought they did a wonderful job for, you know, of basically in this one penultimate episode, setting her up as this force to be reckoned with going into the finale when, you know, she had just been, you know, she had basically just that one appearance, basically essentially raping Tommy in episode 3. Mm-hmm. and then coming back and just seemingly out of nowhere just creating this monstrous threat to everything that's been set up this season.
Yeah, it's with one episode left, I'm not sure exactly how they're going to pull all this together, but when they do, I have a feeling it's going to be pretty ugly.
Yes,
absolutely. It is The Leftovers. So it can't be fun.
No.
Not on that level anyway. Let's see. That brings us to The Flash, Season 2, Episode 8, Legends of Today. A crossover episode with Arrow begins with Vandal Savage attacking Kendra and Cisco. Barry then takes Kendra to Star City and asks Oliver to hide her until he can stop Vandal. But Hawkman, a man with wings, shows up and flies off with Kendra. Meanwhile, Harrison develops a serum to make Barry run faster and asks Jay to test it. Yes, indeed. And this one came in at an average of 8.63. And Henry says there are some really great parts of the episode, even if it doesn't fully coalesce into a complete whole. So, Gary, you gave this one a 9. You seem to have really enjoyed it.
Oh, I really loved it. I love the introduction of Vandal Savage, a villain who really doesn't even want anything to do with these heroes. He just wants to kill Kendra and Carter. Or Hawkman, I guess, whatever name you want to use for him, or Khufu, and just be on his way. He really cares nothing about these superheroes. He doesn't want to take over Star City. He doesn't want to, you know, kill the Flash. He just wants to be on his way, you know. So I sort of like this idea of this villain who's more bothered than focused on on the Flash or Arrow, for that matter. I enjoyed the introduction of the Velocity drug. Did they actually call it Velocity 6, I think?
Yes.
Which actually was in the comic books as well, back in the early 90s. So I was a little pleasantly surprised to see that come up. Again, I hate the portrayal of Jay as somebody who almost doesn't want to do anything. I really wish he was more active. This little cameo we had with him just to save to pull the bullet out seemed a little cheap for me. I want it more. I thought it was really nice. I thought this was a less clunky introduction of characters to be shifted over than some of the other episodes that we've dealt with lately. They were, you know, involved. We got a pretty good history of them. They contributed and weren't just, you know, somebody who was suffering or desperately needed help. They were sort of working together with everything. So I really liked it a lot. Some of it was a bit comic book cheesy, but that's what The Flash is, isn't it? I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Edmund, what would you add to that?
I find Henry's comment interesting because, I mean, I actually made the decision, even though thanks to the way we're splitting things up, we are discussing them separately. But I actually did wait until the following night once Arrow had aired as well, so I could watch them together. I think that does help to a certain extent because this was a case of where they weren't really standalone episodes. I did as well. Really enjoyed the way they were setting things up, and also certainly the way they were introducing the whole ghosting and going back in time aspect rearing its head again, and certainly that made the whole nasty end of things. It was nice the way they introduced that early on. So even though there is this horrible climactic thing to come, they were already planting the seeds of how they were going to get out of it and allow everything to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It definitely felt like the first half of something, but it continues also, which I think about a good half point came off for me for this, to once again, this is so much set up for something else. It's not, I mean, and adding to that a crossover, the crossover is fun, but at the same time, it's like you guys are telling a story to set something else up. It's not really resolving stuff or speaking to stuff necessarily in your show or either of your shows. It's for a different show. So, yes, I understand that they're setting this whole thing off, but, man, they're spending half a season doing it. So even when they do really, really well, it's kind of gets a little bit of a deficit because of it. Okay, but at any rate, moving on then to Star Wars Rebels, Season 2, Episode 7, Stealth Strike. A new Imperial ship captures Ezra, Commander Sato, and his crew, forcing Kanan and the clone to go undercover as stormtroopers to free the rebels. And this one came in at an 8.25. And again, Gary, you gave this a 9.
Holy heck, this was a lot of fun. Just listening to Captain Rex pick on stormtroopers was well worth giving this episode a 9 if for no other reason. This armor really sucks. These guys can't hit anything. How do they see anything in these helmets? It was hilarious. As I said, that was worth it just for his complaints about stormtroopers. But that being said, the type of ship they're talking about, we know from different schematic things and the like, are called interdictor ships, which basically pull ships out of hyperspace, which have been mentioned in books and different tech manuals for years. But it's nice that they sort of introduced them and showed that they were relatively a new development, and give us a sort of place where they actually start being used, which we didn't have before. So that was both a nice inclusion for us tech geeks in the Star Wars universe, as well as sort of placing them in their right time frame and maybe why they weren't used as much early on in the rebellion. So that part I enjoyed. I also liked how they were dealing with this whole issue of that the Empire still is not taking the rebellion seriously. They did not guard Ezra the way they should. He escaped and eventually managed to get the ship to blow up with his droid's help. So I sort of like how you see the Empire underestimating the rebels. They, you know, they bring out this new weapon. They think, okay, the rebels are going to be done, but they're still, they still get surprises once in a while. So that was really good.
Yes, it was definitely interesting to see the seeds being planted for the future. And like you said, some of the banter was just on point. All right, next on the list, we have Haven, Season 5, Episode 22, A Matter of Time. Audrey and Duke search for a way to save Nathan from the void, and at the same time, Dave must plumb the depths of his own mind in his struggle to free himself from Croatoan's deadly grasp. And this one came in at an 8. Again, it was basically the second part of what the previous episode had begun, and while it did feel a little bit stretched out, it was still pretty good material, because, yeah, we're really getting towards the endgame. Next, we have The Man in the High Castle, Season 1, Episode 2, Sunrise. Why do I do this to myself? Forget it.
The Kempai Tai.
Kempai Tai, thank you. Hold Frank captive. Meanwhile, a furious man provides Juliana with a clue about the films, and an unlucky turn of events. Shock. Forget it.
Obergruppen
Fiora Smith.
Thank you.
Why is that hard? You even included the umflot, so we knew how to adjust it.
I don't know how to speak German. Come on. Anyway. Okay, that was good. Yes, this one came in at an 8. And Gary, it seems like you like this a bit better.
Oh yeah. This is... I'm enjoying this episode a lot better. I felt we got a lot more development for the characters. I enjoyed seeing the brutality, but it helped inform me as to the state of the world, how brutal things can be, besides, you know, not just paper checks, but, you know, people getting hauled off without warrants, held for indeterminate amounts of time. You're beginning to see that it's not just a little bit worse. It's a lot worse for the country, but even the citizens. So I enjoyed the world building. I'm still sort of scratching my head about this film. I don't quite understand what it is they're in search of about the film. I did enjoy actually watching seeing more of the film. That was a nice little touch. And I don't know about this Nazi secret agent guy. While he's doing his job, I don't know how dedicated he is. It seems like he's starting to question things, and I like that sort of internal validation process that he's sort of questioning his own motives.
Hmm. Edmund, how about you?
I think after the setup of the first episode, they were doing a good job of giving us more of the background of these characters, sort of focusing in more on the individuals. As I mentioned when we were talking about the first episode, I mean, having started to read the book, where the third person omniscient narrator of the book, where you're really inside these people's heads, right from the beginning, this episode was now starting to do a better job of giving us more of that internal monologue and conflict, as Gary mentioned, or potential conflicts cropping up.
Indeed. Yeah, I'm looking forward to how they kind of expand upon that in the episodes to come. Next, we have Ash versus the Evil Dead, Season 1, Episode 5, The Host. Kelly places the team in jeopardy, Pablo makes a courageous move, and Ash turns over a new leaf, revealing a new side to his character.
Well, I'm not sure about that last part, but...
writes this stuff, I don't know.
It looks like I was the only one who's kept up with Ash versus Evil Dead this week. I gave this episode an 8, basically it is the wind up of the demon host who they thought they had defeated, but of course as we learned in the previous episode, has just taken up residence in Kelly, and there is quite a bit of misdirection, as this show has kind of perfected, just a nice mix of some over the top gore and some sort of surprisingly humorous situations as the demon tries to convince everybody that, of course, it is Ash who is the one who is possessed, the one they need to take out, which means Bruce Campbell winds up tied up and actually gagged for a bunch of the episode, but still manages to in his inimitable style get quite a bit across, even when he's supposedly not able to speak.
Yeah, I didn't quite keep up, but I'm sure that it was at the same level of what we've been used to from this particular show.
Oh yeah.
Homeland, Season 5, Episode 9. Go ahead.
Season 5, Episode 9, the Litvinov ruse, the CIA.
Honestly, I'm just not.
Yeah, well, I just looking down the list, I guess I'll be taking Legend as well then.
Maybe.
Showtime taking a page from AMC, the CIA NBND make a play. This was the whole situation with Allison finally coming to a head, Saul and Carrie putting their plan to entrap her into play, and I wound up giving this an 8 as well, and the main thing for me, and this may be one of those situations where I'm just way too versed in the spy genre, but basically they appear to have Allison on the run, they take her in, and I just completely called immediately the play she was going to make to get out of it. It was all very competently done, as this season has been throughout, they just made it a little too obvious for me. I'm sure there are people who perhaps are not as used to double crosses and triple crosses as I am, who might have been surprised by it. I was really expecting it way too much. On the flip side, the other part of the story, Quinn is in deep doo doo, and we are all keeping our fingers crossed that preemptive shot he got is presumably going to work, at least to some extent. His character is just being put through the ringer this season, and it's quite uncomfortable to see at times.
Yes, it is. It literally is the season of let's just torture Quinn.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What did that actor do? That's what I want to know. I have a feeling we will never know, but that's just what comes to mind. Moving on then to the next show on the list, and that is Into the Badlands, Season 1, Episode 3, White Stork Spreads Wings. As Sonny begins to train MK, the boy struggles to learn discipline. Meanwhile, Quinn seeks retribution against the widow and faces the consequences.
Oh, yeah.
And this one comes in at an average of 8 as well. And what were your thoughts on this one, Edwin?
Certainly. It was a bit of a surprise that the Baron and the widow actually wound up coming to blows so soon. The choreography continues to be amazing, and I thought they did a very good job of setting up a battle that was certainly showing off their respective skills. And yet coming to a believable end that, of course, did not wind up with either of them actually killing each other. I'm finding I really like the dynamics they're setting up. Both with MK being sort of split between the two houses, the way the kidnappings and taking backs occurred, and then as well the whole conflicts within the Baron's family, and then Sonny's paramour, and how she, how she's now getting drawn into all this with hideous dispatching of her parents in the last episode, and how that's really drawing her into the Baron's orbit, which is starting to feel quite creepy in its own way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's some interesting interweaving relationships. I'll put it mildly on that one, but
the other thing I want to mention is I'm also finding it highly amusing how much they are they do seem to be trying to make the Baron's child bride a complete Natalie Dormer knockoff from Game of Thrones.
Yes, indeed, they basically are. And oddly enough, she was actually on the Tudors as well.
Ah, okay.
As a daughter of Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
It does. Anywho, Edmund, why don't you take the next one?
Oh, jeez, John.
Ilyana, I can get. It's the Zakayeva?
Yeah, that's close enough. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, this is Legends Season 2, Episode 4, The Legend of Ilyana Zakheva. Kate becomes a fugitive in modern-day Paris, so Martin puts her into hiding. Meanwhile, Ballard unearths information that could lead him to Martin, and Ilyana asks Dimitri for a dangerous favor in 2001 Prague. And both of us gave, both me and John gave this an 8 as well. This seems to be our default in the middle to bottom of the list here. Yeah, I mean, this, dealing with the aftermath from the previous episode that they, as I mentioned last week, I think that they quite rightly did postpone after the events of Paris. Not that it was a carbon copy, but was certainly close enough to touch off unfortunate comparisons. This show really is just does keep moving along nicely, and I'm enjoying more and more as it spools out this decision they've taken to of the different timelines and having them weave in and out of each other compared to that first season where they got way too caught up in the mystery of who is Martin Odom and what is truth and fiction and legend and reality, and this season they really have done away with all that, and even though that we still have the mysteries that are unfolding, it continues to be a good use of the flashback and flash forward to actually give us a little more depth to the story, and doing it without feeling gratuitous or confusing.
Yes, it's managing its reboot very well. As I said before, I love the flashback format, and everything else is working out pretty nicely in terms of the character study. Like you said, maybe getting rid of that pretension that they had the first season a little bit.
Yeah.
And playing to their strengths. And finally, we have here a show that, I'm a little surprised it didn't wind up higher on the list, but maybe a few disappointments here in the mid-season finale. The Walking Dead, Season 6, Episode 8, Start to Finish. After having a few moments of peace, trouble finds its way to Alexandria yet again, only this time the threat might be too big to defeat. And this came in at an average of 7.63 over on VOGNetwork.com. Flacco Jones says, not great, but not terrible mid-season finale. Since I don't read the books, I have no idea what's coming, but my friend who does know was way more frustrated at how they left it hanging. Yes, that poor kid is a goner, though, for sure. you have no idea. Yeah, that kid is going to be looking at the flowers. Let's put it that way. I completely agree with the comment, though. Knowing what was supposed to happen made it so much worse that they ended it where they did. Because at least I had the feeling throughout the episode that, okay, you're going to get to that point. You're going to get to that point. That's a great place to end the finale, half season finale, whatever, mid season. That's great. And you kind of start it and just
then you fade to black. Yeah.
You bastards. It's not like you need to have a cliffhanger in order to have people come back. You're hitting record ratings, remember. Yeah. They're going to come back. No one is going to say, that was unsatisfying. They're going to come back.
Yeah.
This was giving them a reason not to.
Yeah,
Gary, I gave it 7. You thought it was pretty much. I'm sorry, Edmund. You were going to start with something.
Well, no. I mean, what really got to me, is especially given the title of the episode, Start to Finish. Guys, you didn't finish.
That's right.
But no, I was disappointed. These guys have been in much worse circumstances than this, and it seemed like until almost the very end, they were sort of clueless of what to do, how to handle it. I was like, are we back in, season 2, trying to figure out, how to get through some of this stuff? They used to have a way of doing this, send one person, go make, throw something over the side to make noise, then run out this other way. We've seen this a few times. Now all of a sudden they've forgotten how to do everything. And it was irritating to me. That being said, I was a little surprised that kid made it, at least to that point. And we'll have to see what else happens. That's a lot of zombies to clear out of the town. Hopefully Rick will get to do his thing like he said about drawing them back out again, so we'll have to see.
I guess part of it is that they're moving right along in introducing some of the things that we know are going to happen at the end of the season. So just there's no need. And after the beginning of the episode, the beginning of the episode was great. You have walkers everywhere. You had people scrambling around. You had, you know, all barely getting into shelter. And you just figured that the intensity is going to continue. And then no. And then there was the whole ridiculous thing with Carl and Ron. Ron, what planning is that? That just, no. What, murder-suicide by zombie? What was that all about? I mean, I understand he's a teenager. He's not necessarily thinking straight, but really? it seemed designed a little overly designed to give Carl that moment of heroism or to show that he's grown. And it was just blatant in the way that they did it. And that's where I think I felt pretty disappointed with that particular plot point. What else would we say for this one? It's hard to say, really. I mean, that's the problem. It kind of ended abruptly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would like to say, Glenn seems to be the only one thinking.
Well, he had a lot of time to think.
Yeah, well, true, but I'm just saying, he gets there and he's like, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that. You know, he seems actually to be the only proactive person doing anything.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's the mid-season finale for The Walking Dead. Unfortunately, did we bring up Carol finally deciding that it was time to kill some folk?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, because timing being what it is, Carol, just let the walkers take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to have a confrontation with Morgan right now. In fact, Morgan might help everyone else survive. Then you can take care of Morgan. You've shown that you've got no problem taking care of business when time is right. You didn't need to do it right then. Could have maybe avoided the whole problem.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah,
that's it.
Oh,
go ahead.
No, I did just realize that there is one thing we can be thankful for. At least they didn't decide to make this one 90 minutes as well. Because that might have been interminable.
It might have been. All right. Well, that is it for the material for the week ending the 1st of December, which means that we can get into a little bit of feedback. So as I bring that up, basically, it's been a couple of weeks since we've really even checked anything. So hopefully this isn't too old, and it would be nice if it actually showed up. That's not what I wanted. Interwebs, stop it. All right. So what we have here is some feedback from Danger Mouse going back to the 25th of November. And this is regarding Episode 7. So Episode 7, yes. I remember when Episode 7 was first announced and Abrams was attached to direct. There was quite a bit of discussion, at least on the websites that I was reading at the time, on whether Abrams' mystery box approach to filmmaking would work with a franchise as big as Star Wars. A few years later, I'm actually amazed at how much we do not know about the upcoming movie. There is quite a bit of speculation out there, of course, but like most of you, I've tried to steer away from it. Even one of the last TV spots had this awesome action shot moment that I wish I could have unseen. And Mark Hamill tweeted a reply to a question about his beard the other day that I thought was a bit spoilery as well. I don't want to have to block him. Yes, damn it, Mark Hamill, we're blocking you. Anyway, unfortunately for me, I have to work when the movie comes out and we'll have to wait until the 20th. I'm not sure how well I'll be able to keep away from spoilers until I do get a chance to see it. As far as spoilers in general, especially for TV shows, the only show that I worry about is The Walking Dead. This last Sunday night, the 22nd of November, the episode had already started while I was busy doing something else. I happened to glance at Facebook, and within a few moments of the show airing live, there were already spoilers on what happened to Glenn on various news sites. Now that was irritating. Well, okay, as far as that one's concerned, basically you could have made the most vague comments. In fact, I remember making the most vague comments, and everyone knew what it was about. Because for a month, people wanted to know what was going on with Glenn. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't walk past the dumpster without having a Walking Dead fan checking underneath of it just in case Glenn was there. So, yeah, it was irritating, but I'm not surprised that it happened, nor should it be that surprising because literally when you start the episode, within a minute, you know what happened to Glenn.
Yeah,
it's not a spoiler. It starts right there. So, that one I don't know, but I will say in general, The Walking Dead, I have enough friends that will spoil the hell out of it immediately that I have to watch it live. I don't have a choice if I want to not be spoiled. And there are a couple shows like that. I mean, Game of Thrones is another one that you pretty much have to watch right away. Any other shows you guys can think of where you have to watch it live in order to not be spoiled? I mean, I understand the shows like Manhattan where you want to see it, right away because of the anticipation, but I can't think of any other ones right now. Maybe Doctor Who, but at the same time, Doctor Who, you get spoiled on stuff like 3 months in advance.
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, those two. I mean, and it's no surprise. I mean, given the viewing numbers, those are the ones that you are definitely most likely to catch something you don't want to see. And of course, there is always the attempt to stay off social media until you have seen it. But even then, I mean, that means you're still going to watch it that same evening. Just try and stay away for an hour or so until you get to it.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. It's what I guess annoys me more is the whole not even letting the West Coast see it before you spoil it.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I understand on the East Coast we were like, man, you know, if they could just wait 10 minutes, that would be nice. But the West Coast, I really feel bad for those guys. I really do. It's like they get the short end of the stick on everything. But yeah, let's see. As far as some of these other comments go, Danger Mouse, I'm sorry that you have to wait until the 20th, but I'm going to be honest. I'm probably going to have to wait until after Christmas. So my chances of going into The Force Awakens with any spoiler not unturned, pretty low.
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure I'm going to know everything about that movie before I walk in the door. So.
Yeah. I'll just send you the summary on Saturday, John.
That's fine. You do that. I'm resigned at this point to it. It really has nothing to do with being shocked or surprised. There's so much else that goes into it that I'm not really that upset about the notion. If you want to be upset about the notion of being spoiled about a movie way before you see it, how about Batman versus Superman? Is there anything left? But anyway.
We don't know how Lex loses his hair yet.
There you go. Yes, that's about okay. All it is, and it's going to be an unfortunate accident involving some kind of alien shampoo, I'm almost positive. Mr. Garibaldi will not talk about it. But at any rate, yeah, I don't know. I'm not expecting to have too many people that see it. It's too big of a thing. If you don't see it within 48 hours, you're pretty much screwed. And then you're going to pretty much have to hunker down for those 48 hours. I expect to know everything about the movie Friday morning. Never mind you and Saturday, Gary. Forget it.
Okay.
The Thursday midnight people are going to spoil the hell out of everything for everybody. That's just the way it's going to go. So Danger Mouse, stay away from the interwebs for like 3 days straight. You might want to stay not just away from the interwebs, just stay away from people. Generally speaking, you need some advice on how to do that. I'll be perfectly happy to give it to you. But the funny thing is that I actually am off starting the 18th. And the only reason I won't see it until after Christmas is because there's no way that I could go without my wife. So, because I'll be off and the kids will be off, but she won't. So, and there's no way. I think that one of them might be able to handle not saying anything, but my son, forget it. There's no way. He's too big of a fanboy. He'd explode with details. So, yeah. Gary, you said Saturday, so I guess that you've already got your pre-ordered tickets?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Edmund, you in my boat where you're going to catch it whenever you get around to it?
No. I will be catching it on the 18th.
Oh, you... Okay.
I promise not to tease you too much.
Okay.
There's going to be spaceships, John.
Really?
Yes.
You don't say. Are there going to be wars among the stars, perhaps?
Yes.
There will be a virtual morality play of good versus evil.
Oh, wow.
I'm shocked.
Brightly colored swords, perhaps? I'm just saying.
Yes.
Just saying.
With superfluous or perhaps practical hilts on them.
Okay, so I'm sorry, just.
And John, you thought the names you were trying to pronounce now are rough?
Oh,
wait until you see the movie names.
Oh, well, I've seen some of them, but yeah. No, I just don't know what it is because usually I can at least make a good pass at it, but it's like forget it now. No. And people have been throwing German at me all day. So, yeah. Let's see. Beyond that, I mean, we did have an open topic, but it is probably going to take too much time for this particular episode. So I'll just throw out there anything that you guys did in the last couple of weeks. I mean, how was everybody's Thanksgiving? Any good plans? Any good travel?
Anything? Yeah. Yes.
Oh, really?
I took a cruise to Mexico.
Oh.
We got to see Mayan ruins. It was a nice boat ride that caused reversals of fortune. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. We'd never been there before, so it was something new to see. I actually got to read a Star Trek book during my trip, which was great.
Oh yeah, what did you read?
It was part of the Fall series. It was
Okay.
Which it was the a Ceremony of Losses, I believe it was, with Bashir finding a cure to a genetic disease.
Okay.
Well, I guess he said the spoilers things. Anyway, so I'll just go ahead and do it. It's been out for a while anyway. Julian Bashir finds a cure for the infertility of Andoria, which was a founding member of the Federation, and it was a little Section 31 involved with it, some other stuff. So it was an enjoyable, nice read. I liked it a lot. And in the end, he was kicked out of Starfleet and put in a no-name prison forever. Or at least that's how the book ended up. So.
Ah.
Spoiler. So, things happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was fun. While we joke around about the sort of Babylon Deep Space Nine confrontations between the two, I still enjoy Deep Space Nine, and it was fun to revisit the characters in something original.
Yeah, I remember the Fall series of books, and I remember that on the whole, I really actually did enjoy them quite a bit. Just the fact that it really shook things up, and the machinations behind everything were pretty interesting. Mm. Yeah. So, it sounds like a good holiday. The cruise went well?
Well, yeah, John, when they basically give you all the food and liquor you want to drink for, nonstop for 4 to 5 days, things are usually good.
Understandable.
Yeah.
It sounds like Dragon Con on the ocean. But anyway.
The carpet isn't as nice, John.
Mm-hmm. Edmund, how about you? Any good stuff over the last couple of weeks?
I was going to say, just Thanksgiving-wise, I actually had a non-traditional Thanksgiving. Some friends had me over for Leg of Lamb, which is actually, do still hold a British passport, which, as a British subject, I thought was is one of my favorite dinners, and having it on Thanksgiving just seemed appropriate. Commentary, shall we say. I did actually have some Cornish game hens later in the weekend, so I was not completely without fowl for the holiday. I was mentioning when we were talking about Man in the High Castle earlier this week that I had been rereading that, and also in anticipation of adaptations down the line, I have also been rereading Childhood's End, and it's been kind of interesting, actually. It's been a number of years since I've read really any of that sort of classic golden age science fiction, it does kind of feel like going back to a simpler time, because I think particularly Clark and Asimov, there's one criticism of those early books, it's that the characterizations can be somewhat by the numbers and idealized on these main characters, I think Asimov was probably more guilty of that with Clark, so there is a little more nuance, but there is definitely that sort of great white leader stereotype that's being presented. It's been very interesting revisiting that book, and also trying to imagine for the soon to premiere adaptation on Sci-Fi what they might have been doing to perhaps update it a little bit, because it was certainly one of those books that was assuming that the East-West America versus the Soviet Union divide was something that would still be in place. So I'm wondering, I'll be very interested to see how they deal with that aspect. Although, of course, given these circumstances that happen almost immediately in the book, that does all become old hat. So, it's not necessarily a big impediment, but it will be, will be interesting to see how they handle it, or if they just bring it up into the modern day and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how they're going to update everything, it certainly was a product of its time, so it's not entirely clear how they're going to go about that, even from what we've seen so far in the previews.
Yep.
So, yes, let's see here. So, yeah, I guess for me there was a little bit of travel, but not too much, which was it was kind of nice just to kind of go to the typical family Thanksgiving and then come home. Got a lot of played a lot of games. Certainly, I'll just give a shout out to the Telltale Games, Game of Thrones, Iron from Ice, I guess it is, and then there is also the Tales from the Borderlands, which my daughter was watching me play that as I was going through, and it's really twisted humor, and so she really enjoyed that quite a bit. And we did go out also to go see Mockingjay Part 2, which was, at least as far as I recall, it was actually pretty faithful to the book, which I'm quite happy to report. I know that not everybody is going to be happy with that news, but as someone who actually really enjoyed the book, I was kind of happy with that, and it played out pretty much the way that it should have. Yeah, it was actually quite good. We enjoyed it quite a bit. So, I didn't get to watch it with her, but Sunday morning I woke up and we had to go and do some chores, and actually we're picking up our son who went on a sleepover, and she turns to me and says, "I watched the most awesome movie this morning." And I'm thinking, okay, what kind of movie are we talking about? She says, "It was Kingsman: The Secret Service." She adored that movie.
And
she
why
was
not?
Laughing hysterically at the ending. She's like, "Oh, the fireworks and the heads exploding. It's the best thing ever." I was like, "Really? Okay. I'm impressed."
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't have been surprised, but I'm impressed. Yeah, she thought it was great. She was going on and on about how wonderfully brutal the church scene was. And I was like, okay, good to know. She's like, "Oh, I'll watch that again anytime. There's a sequel coming." Really? Yes, yes there is.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we'll be seeing that one together. So, yeah, it was kind of nice to see that unfold. But otherwise, yeah, it's been just trying to get geared up for the holidays and everything else. But what I've been reading, I'm about halfway through the first book in the new steampunk novel series that Jim Butcher is writing. Jim Butcher, of course, from the Dresden Files. I think it's called the series is called The Cinder Spires, and the name of the book is The Aeronauts Windless.
I was in a bookstore this earlier tonight, and I saw that. I didn't pick it up, but it looked interesting.
It is. It's taking me a little longer to get through because of other stuff that I'm doing, but it is definitely an interesting read. It has a lot of that kind of high adventure type of stuff that he does, but it's at least in the first half of this book, it's pretty family friendly, which is nice. You know, Dresden Files, for all that it's like really good stuff, it's not necessarily for anyone under a certain age. So, yeah, I'm just really quite pleased with it. So it's just taking me a little bit longer to get through. Then it's a thick book. It's like 600 some pages. So
yeah. It's looked large.
Yeah. So that one is the one that I'm currently working on. And that's about it. That and getting into the beginning, at least, of Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Roaming Victorian England, killing things. It's like the gangs of New York, but in London, appropriately enough. But that's about it. So I think that pretty much brings us to the end of this week. Next week, of course, we're going to have our usual slate of episodes. I think that we have some total of 21 episodes next week to cover. That's not so bad compared to what we've seen before.
Nope. Yeah, some mid-season finales are finally happening, so...
Yes, indeed. So we'll be getting into that. And hopefully we'll also get into some of those topics that we keep putting off because sooner or later it's not going to be relevant anymore. But as Edmund, you were saying, there are a couple things that are actually going to be coming in December, not just Childhood's End, but also The Expanse will be starting.
Absolutely. Yep.
And we'll be later this year. We're going to have the Doctor Who Christmas special and a Sherlock Christmas special.
In Victorian England,
I've
seen a few preview pictures, just stills, but yeah, it looks fun.
Yes, definitely. We're actually going to be going and seeing both of those in the theater.
I have to explore that option. It's not uncommon for them to do things like that around us, so I'll have to take a look for that.
Absolutely. All right, well, that's it for our week then, and we will catch up with everybody next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.